Vic, you're listening to Ala Nui Mele on PBS Hawaii.
So this is Mae So, and you're listening to Ala Nui Mele on PBS Hawaii.
Peace. Listen up, this is Danny One, and you're listening to Hawaii Hip Hop Histories via Ala Nui Mele on PBS Hawaii. Check it out.
His pen game is as versatile as his pen names. He is an MC, a master on the mic, a chosen one of some sort, being able to move the crowds across the continents with his music. Later channeling that very mastery to start a record label and clothing company called Flip the Bird. The level of ingenuity and originality reflected not only with his music, but with his designs on shirts and iconic sneakers he created with Run Athletics. He created a blueprint to how an artist from Hawaii could make a lasting impression and impact on a wonky music industry without compromise. Always staying low-key like the brother of Thor, Tasho Pierce.
Hey.
What's up, Tasho?
What's up, Cavett? Man, what a kind intro, man. I'm going to have to sample that. I'm going to need that.
Nah. Oh,
low-key like the brother of Thor, man. You took it back.
Dude, I was trying to write this intro and I'm like... I need something. Tasho got a lot of lines. I'm like, and I kind of remember that one because now that Marvel, you know, the MCU is huge, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that one was like a slow hitter for me.
Right.
When I first heard it, it didn't catch me until later. And I'm like, look.
What verse was that? That was a good, there were some good lines on
that. That was on Rhyme and Punishment.
Oh, okay.
On, Ringleader.
Okay.
Produced by.
That's Sizer. No, that was actually Mr. Rios.
Mr. Rios.
Yeah, that's Mr. Rios. Yeah, I would say, like, you know, if you listen to the album, like, that, there's no really other single than Honolulu, but if there was, it would be Ringleader.
Oh, nice.
That's a dope album, though.
A
little catchy feel to it, yeah.
I'm kind of bummed. I don't know where my LP went. It's somewhere in the archives. But because I've been doing this podcast, and I was like, oh, I'm going to interview Tasho. I was like, I got to pull it out, but I couldn't find it. And I was like,
I got you, bro. I got you. I'll get you the instrumental, too. That's the rare white label. Yeah.
Anyway, how you doing, man?
I'm good, brother. Thank you for bringing me here, man.
No problem.
It's an honor. Yeah, and congratulations on this whole, partnership.
Yeah,
this
is dope. No, I'm stoked, man. PBS is showing up for Hawaii Hip Hop.
I need you to get me a drop from David Attenborough.
I want a drop too. It'd be dope to be like
grew up on that guy, man.
Like, you're listening to Ala Nui Mele, you know, with like bird sounds in the back. Shout out to David Attenborough. But anyway, let's take it way back. So you grew up in Kaimuki, or was it?
We bounced around a lot. I was so originally born in Japan.
Right.
My mother's Japanese. My dad is Haole. He went to high school in Japan. My grandmother was a writer for the Japan Times, Jean Pierce. She wrote like an advice column. So he lived there 17 years, spoke fluently, went with my mom down to Iriomote, which is famous for the Iriomote Wildcat. It's a small, tiny island off the coast of Okinawa.
Nice.
No electricity. Super primitive. My dad was the only gaijin, non-Japanese guy, and he's plowing rice with a water buffalo.
Whoa.
This is like during this hippie days.
Crazy.
Yeah, and then I guess didn't work out, whatever, between him and my mom. He split, moved to Hawaii. We started out, you know, I think we lived in like a little studio in Mo'il, and then we moved to Kalihi for a little while, and then eventually ended up in Kaimuki side.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ended up going to Kalani?
Went to Kalani, graduated from Kalani High. Yeah.
So in Kalani, what was your first experience with hip-hop? Was it before you got to high school, or was it during your middle school era?
Probably middle school, I mean, originally, you know, it was like way back, like second, third grade, my first like big moment was the Run DMC concert with ZZ Top. That like totally blew my mind.
Was that here?
Yeah, it was at Aloha Stadium.
And you actually went to that?
Yes.
Dang.
Dude, it was incredible.
I didn't go to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to guess it was like 87 or something like that. You can check the facts on that. But yeah, young 8-year-old show was just like.
Your dad took you.
Actually, my buddy's dad, Hoala's dad, Mr. Greavy, was always super cool. He took us around and took us to do stuff like that. But yeah, I remember having those tapes, Run DMC, you know, all these Eric B and Rakim, Beastie Boys, License to Ill, you know, that was past King of Rock. That was that was Raising Hell already when that they did the big, they were doing the stadium tours, you know, at that point with ZZ Top.
Was it ZZ Top opening for Run DMC? Or the other way around?
Dude, I don't remember. I know Henry Capono was on the bill, too.
Oh, that's crazy.
He was the opener. That was a pretty random
only
lineup.
Only in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I bet you everybody loved it, though.
I don't even remember that. I went back and I was like, I wanted to buy the poster. So I was like searching on YouTube, but it was like way too much money.
And poster.
Searching on eBay. But I found the poster, but it was like way too much. But then it's Capono was on there, too. But later on, we were, you know, the first guy that kind of brought me back into hip hop was probably Aaron Ha'o. When I met him, we were kind of all like punk rockers. We hung out at the Pink Burger King on University. Going to punk rock shows. But at that same time, we were starting to listen to like more edgy hardcore rap, like Ghetto Boys,
what year
N.W.A.
Was
this? Had to be like, 90? Yeah, 1990. Yeah, because. So maybe like freshman, sophomore year, we started going more into hip hop. And, you know, I think by the time 92 when Farside dropped,
we were
like, that kind of blew our mind. And then there was like Hieroglyphics and all those, you know, we were listening to like really hardcore rap because that energy kind of reminded us of punk rock. And it's like rebellion and just like rage. And then we went into like, oh, these guys are like actually saying some stuff and like, you know, you just kind of absorb all their words and their patterns. And then we were starting to freestyle and develop our own, you know, skills. I don't know if you could call it that. At that time, it was very rough. just riding around.
So in the punk rock scene, did you see like John Davis and those guys there
too? Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, they were straight edge guys at a certain point, hardcore guys, you know, like Dave Suzuki, all the, you know, the legends of the, you know, the punk rock scene, like MUG, all those, we'd be at, you know, those shows checking it out. And like, it was unreal. Those good times. Like with, I don't know how we were able to do all those things. I think we had fake IDs. So we were able to sneak in and see some of these shows that probably shouldn't have been.
It was simpler times back in the late 80s, early 90s, being just a rug rat running around in town. I mean, I think I moved from Kapolu. I used to live on Montserrat,
right
by Diamond Inn. I moved 90 to West Side.
Oh,
so like I literally probably missed you guys. So I had to catch the bus in from the West Side. From like I lived to Village Park, Waipahu. I was driving to town, but I grew up in the town. I was supposed to go to Kalani, or Kaimuki, but I made it to Kamehameha. So like which was kind of crazy because in my head I'm like, dude, if my parents didn't get divorced. And if I stayed in town, I would have probably went to Kalani because all my friends was at Kamiki Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
I said, would I have been in the Humanaka?
You definitely would have been down, bro. We would have been crew.
I was thinking, no, I really thought that way because I'm like, dude, like literally, because I was all about skateboarding and hip hop and punk rock, everything, right? Yeah. So I did a random hypothetical, like, you know, alternate universe.
Yeah.
So I was like, would Kavi be the catalyst and would he be part of the Humanakas? Because I would have been there. We're like around the same age. So,
yeah.
I mean, skateboarding, hip hop was all relative.
It was like there really wasn't a hip hop scene. I mean, maybe there was, but we were too young to kind of like know about that.
Right.
Like if you wanted to be in a scene, it was either like punk rock or you're going to be like a metalhead or like No, surfer, whatever. There's all these other cliques, but there wasn't really like a formed hip hop scene at that time.
So Kalani was just like you, Ha'o, anybody else was like the
actually,
early.
Actually, Ha'o was Roosevelt.
Okay.
Yeah. And then me and Malala, Fungi, we were at Kalani. And then Mr. Rios and Todd G, they were at Kaiser.
Was this through proximity of Kamiki? I mean, Roosevelt, Kalani, Kaiser, just being in that kind of general area that brought you guys together?
Pink Burger King brought me together. Yeah, that was the connecting factor. And then I don't know how we linked with Mr. Rios and Todd, but I knew that we were already like, listening to like dope hip hop, more underground stuff at that time. And I know that like Todd G, he had like ties with the Far Side at some point. He was like maybe a backup dancer for a video or something before he came to Hawaii. And then Mr. Rios, Guijo, he came from New York. So we kind of felt like, okay, we have these like guys that are actually from the mainland that know hip hop, you know, and we felt like a certain connection, like closer to the essence, you know, just having them around.
Because being from Hawaii, you were hungry. You wanted more, and we only could get it on Yo MTV Raps or whatever you see on TV or magazines. So
when Yo MTV Raps was huge. That was something that kind of like leveled the playing field to where we were watching and listening to a lot of the same stuff that they were watching.
Right.
To, you know,
so when these guys from the mainland come through, you're like, oh, they were there. Mm-hmm. Like, let's pick their brains.
Yeah.
So that was way before Humanakas. That was just you guys just.
Yeah, that was high school. Probably, you know, that was sophomore year with met Guijo. We're recording in his bedroom. He actually had a 4-track.
Wow.
So it was crazy back then. You know what I mean?
That is.
Yeah. So he was like, we're messing around recording over there. And then because of that opportunity to kind of like practice, we were able to like start doing little showcases and shows. And
you remember your first show?
I think it was a talent contest.
Like a brown bags or?
It was Jack the Rapper, and it was crazy.
Wait, the Rapper in Hawaii or Jack the Rapper?
No, it was Jack the Rapper in Hawaii. It was crazy.
Was that the same Jack the Rapper that they had in the mainland?
I don't know. But maybe it was just like a spinoff, but yeah, it was pretty eye-opening. There was like some brawls and some crazy stuff going on. Yeah.
Any notable guys that you remember from then that kind of peek out now?
There was one guy who I caught later on. He always had crutches from Kalihi. I forgot his name, but I've seen him at later shows too. Like he kept going for a while.
He started doing tattoos, I think.
Oh yeah.
I forget
his name, but he was tight. Like if anybody, I was rooting for him to win besides us. We didn't win. Humanakas didn't win. That's the group we all came together for. Humanakas.
Let's rewind. Was that Jack the Rapper? They invited all the MCs. You had to go to a back room. Do you remember? Is that the one? And everybody had to cipher in the back room first before you even get on the stage. Do you remember that show?
Was that? That's not the UH one, is it?
No, this was like, I do remember being at that because I think this might have been 94 or 93, 94, 95. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I do remember the guy, that MC that with the crutches. And I remember you guys there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there with either EP or my other homie.
Yeah.
And there's like all the, I remember just being a lot of MCs going into this back room. Mm-hmm. You had to battle there or something. Then they picked you out and then you got to go on stage. I don't know if you remember that show.
Dude.
But I remember you guys rolling deep.
Yeah.
And I remember that. I know that guy's name, man. I know he's a tattoo guy now.
Oh, okay.
But I know specifically who you're talking about. And he was the sickest out of all those, kind of more of a gangster Khalid guys.
So I think all his boys were there.
Ricky Boy, was that his name?
Yeah, I think that's right. And they were definitely, you know, he was deep. His crew was deep. And somebody went up there and threw up the wrong sign. And I just remember him like walking through the crowd like a pinball machine. Punk, punk, ping. Like, it was not good for that guy.
That's crazy. Yeah,
but that was our, you know, that was like getting our feet wet. And then I think our first, like, we did our own shows like here and there. Just like open mics, Tri Espresso, of course, you know. Valentino's, that was like the start of like Stone Groove Family, Manifest, you know, all those guys ciphering with you know, Jamal Kilowatts and everybody that was around on the scene at the time.
Did you guys link up with so before the Humanakas was branded as a crew, did you guys hook up with anybody like Danny One before that? Size?
Okay, Humanakas was already a crew, and then we met Buzz One.
Okay.
So that became our High State family. That's when we started branching into the High State family. And Buzz One, through him, that opened up our affiliation with like Homegrown Massive.
Okay.
Danny One. That's Trans.
Right.
Skills. Yeah, all those guys. And then, you know, later we had One Night Stand. So that opened up our affiliation with Rude Funk. That's going to be like
Static.
Sweepy, Static, those guys.
Did Buzz bring in, was Casper Kimo already down with the Humanakas, or did you kind of come in with Buzz through VM?
Yeah, through VM. Like, I definitely think we should. We need a moment just to talk on those guys because Buzz, like, to be honest, like my reputation, like as a battle MC, was like kind of like a bulldog, kind of like you know, give me the mic and just kind of not a bully, but like more of an aggressive persona, right? And I got all of that. I adopted that from Buzz, just like because being around him. You know, like when you first meet him, you're going to freestyle and he's going to be like, if you start fading or showing the slightest weakness, he's going to start rapping over you. Oh. And it's like, and all the, you know, like he just had these techniques that would just like get under your skin, but at the same time, like made you better. Like, and the same thing, like Buzz was like somebody that like pushed you to get better. And then when Casper, I first met him, to me, his style was like the illest style. Like his voice and the way he put words together, like in this cryptic, kind of dark style that he had, that just really matched his whole persona. Like that was somebody that was like super proud to have him in the crew, and it made me definitely step up. Like those ciphers between Humanakas and VM is definitely what helped us get better. Because we already had our own kind of style. Like if you think about the Humanakas and you break it down per member, right?
Okay,
like you
got to
talk about like Fungi, right? He's like the dirty bastard of our crew, like the ODB. He's just raunchy and like kind of like busta influence and just like over the top.
Fungi's name is Malala Fungi.
Yeah, he's the main guy that would like. King of Styles, like he would just go anywhere with his style just like, and you know, he had the big afro and the big personality and the big stage presence anywhere we went. That's the guy that people remember, you know. And then of course Ha'o to me is like the backbone for the whole crew. He's like the most like balanced and like, you know, well-rounded artist. He got the voice, he has the subject matter. He's the only Hawaiian MC in, you know, in the High State family, and you know, he sprinkles some of that, but he's like a nice medium between like backpack and more like just like hardcore hip hop. So,
right.
And then of course Taji, he reminds me of like the wordplay, the high vocabulary, but with like that soulful kind of like pasta noose kind of big brother, you know, like trying to give you some guidance. And like, you know, when we were listening to hip hop back then, you actually like felt like you were learning something and getting guidance from some of these MCs.
Definitely.
Like, right. You listen to an album, you're like, oh, you pick up some gems and it's like you carry that with you your whole life. You know, like it's like.
Was Howell's name always Howell?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then Taji
Aaron Kawaii, yeah.
And then Taji was Kid Kalua when I first met him.
Yeah, he was Kid Kalua before he was Taji. Yeah. And then Idealism.
Okay.
He was like our street cred because like he was literally always in the streets with everybody, whether you were extracurricular, let's call it entrepreneurial endeavors that you were taking part of out here in these streets. Like, you knew Ideal, you knew Moon. And then...
shout out to Moon.
Yeah, and then,
love
of course...
Guy.
Yeah, dude, he's off file. He's
Vegas?
Vegas. I think eventually we're going to do this, and we'll do it with all the Humanakas. You know what I mean? That'd be sick. We'll get Moon down here, and that'll be the real story, because I don't know how much... In my memory, I have.
But if
we combine all of us, we have a good story to tell. And then Mr. Rios, he was like just such a good-hearted, warm person, and just like kind, quiet, but like his beats like spoke volumes. He was like the mastermind behind all of our early projects. His ear for digging was like unreal. Yeah. You know, he's using a lot of jazz loops, because of course we listen to Tribe. I think Pete Rock was a big influence for him, so a lot of like jazz loops, but he was finding stuff that would like, I would hear him loop it, then I would hear someone like on the East Coast like loop the same thing later on. Like, his ear was like top tier. So that would be the Humanakas, and that's Vandalous Minds. And then later
so VM Vandalous Minds, was it just Buzz and Casper?
There was Albert, I think, was affiliated, and then also Sean Kelling.
Sean Kelling, yeah. Shout out to Sean.
I don't know what exactly their role was. I know they were just, like, squad.
I know Sean, like he bombed with
Oh, okay. On the writer side.
The writer side. And I think he played bass.
Oh, okay.
I played skate. Yeah, because I remember I skated with him early on. Then he went to Roosevelt. I went to Kamehameha. Mm-hmm. Then we linked back at Funk Pistol. Oh, and he's like, yo, Kevin. I'm like, Sean, what? You still here? I thought you went back to New York. He's like, nah, dude. And he told me, like, you got to come out with us. I'm gonna link up with these guys, you know, like these guys. And he started talking about you guys. I'm like, oh, okay, word. We never connected. That's what I mean. It's like so many missed opportunities. Like that was high school. So I was like, he was at Roosevelt. And he said, yeah, you got to come out to these ciphers because he was getting up, meaning like tagging VM. Mm-hmm. He's like, my crew VM, da, 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 da. And I was like, okay, cool. But I never ever went to one of those like just, you know, meetings of the minds. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm like, dang, dude, that was like another opportunity. I could have like linked with the Nakas earlier, just VM early. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. But shout out to Sean. He owns a skate shop in California now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because he's...
I used to kick it with him whenever I went to New York.
Yeah, he's OG New York, rookie, New York skateboarding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Really good guy. So that was VM. And you guys also had Sixth Sense, right?
Okay, so yeah, Sixth Sense, that is like... Yeah, those are like the real Kapahulu, you know, they're the real Kapahulu G's, you know, like they were really in the game. I just basically, Romeo, I knew him since prospect, since second grade. Right. He was like my best friend since like second grade. We played for the St. Louis Orioles at Connie White Park. You know what I mean? Like he was always like super athletic, talented. I think he was like for our first couple years quarterback at Kalani, but he was my boy. And when we started listening to hip hop, I like put him on to like Lower End Theory and like changed his game, like his whole idea of what hip hop was, you know, like they're just listening to his like straight gangster stuff. And then they're like, oh, this is dope. And then he would start to, you know, freestyle whenever we'd hang out on Hayden Street.
Yeah.
We'd all just sit on the wall there and like freestyle and stuff. And then him and AB Ant One and but Ro was just crazy off the head, just super sharp. Like he was one of the nicest, like just off the dome. And then when he translated that into writing, he was also sick. AB Ant, Ant Bone came from, he was from LA, I think. He's a little bit older. He had some stripes. He was definitely like OG, but he definitely had like kind of like a Spice One chop to his flow. Yeah, and then there was Scott Sick, who's also from Kapahulu.
Yeah.
And he was nasty, bro. He had an ill voice, and his flows were, like, super sharp. So we were stoked to bring them into the crew. And then, of course, Size One was, like, the architect, the guy who knew all the history and knew everything about Hawaii hip-hop, knew everything about East Coast hip-hop, West Coast. I think he worked at Tower Records for a while, and he was a producer. And he was someone that, like, when he entered the fold, he elevated everyone's game because he had, like, a certain perspective and a skill set that, like, you know, and a discipline that made us
Who introduced you guys to Size?
I think it was, like, Todd or, like, Gizo met him at Tower Records. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I met this guy. He makes beats. And we went over to his house. He was, like, I think on, like, Pensacola or something. Where was he? Pecoy, went to his apartment over there, and we're like listening to the beats, and we're like, oh, this is different than Mr. Rios. Mr. Rios is real like loose and flowy and like funky and like, but Size was just like real concise and like that like boom bap. Yeah. Like you could that foundation because he trained. He went to New York. He was a disciple of Phase Two.
Wow.
So Size had that like that New York essence, you know.
Yeah, his chops, his ear for chopping up samples and recreating beats. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he's got to be. I mean, he's like almost the unicorn of Hawaii hip hop because he's been there in the 80s with graffiti, skateboarding, graffiti. I mean, MC production, like you know, and he's been there at every single point, and he's kind of like a quiet, just kind of chilling in the shadows, almost like you know, like what was that? Like a ninja almost.
Yeah.
You know, just chilling.
Definitely.
But he's like, at any moment, he can come on and bam.
Yeah. like right now, he's got beats, like folders of beats right now. We're actually in the talks. We're not in the talks. We're actually started recording the new Invisible Ink project, just me and Size back together working on that. So, oh, like,
sick.
His beats are like phenomenal. They just keep elevating.
So that's pretty much, I mean, that's like the Humanakas, High State.
That's High State fam, of course, with the affiliates of Rude Funk. Right. And then of course, Fame came into VM. Yeah, yeah.
How did Fame
He was with Buzz and Casper. He became their main producer, and then of course broke off later into Mo Illa Pillas. I think Fame is like top five producer in Hawaii. I'm gonna go, you know, Mr. Rios is up there, of course Size is in there, but Fame is right there.
I mean, just like those three guys alone. I mean, there's like, you know, Danny Wan got beats, mm-hmm. but Fame. I think Fame is like on the mic mm-hmm. and production.
Yeah, he's like a Kanye.
He is, man. I see that guy like often now because his son goes to Kamehameha and my son goes to Kamehameha. Oh, so we always bump into each other. Yeah. And it's like I train myself not to call him Fame.
Jesse, Fame.
It's like, I can't help it, man. Yeah. And the funny part is when I see certain individuals like you or like Fame, I have lyrics in my head.
Yeah.
So, you know, I hear like Jesse Fame on the top of the food chain. You know, I hear that when I see him. Yeah. When I hear see you, like the low key lyric came into my head. So it's kind of funny how, no matter, although we're like, you know, getting our grown dads on, you know, adult cosplay, mm-hmm. cosplaying as adults and fathers, that it never kind of leaves.
Still got a zipper in the back of us and a little b-boy hops out. Yeah. What's up? I mean, and then of course we got, you know, Jimmy Taco when he came in. He became like our go-to engineer. Like, I think I met him through Danny. They had a studio in IAF for a little while, but Danny One's studio was like the first, like, even though it was like we were recording in the bathroom, it was still like a more of a real studio than we had ever been before. Like,
been a four track and a mic.
Yeah, you know, you just can't record after lunch. You got to wait a few hours because it's gonna be a problem in that booth. Yeah, so
classic. So, do you remember your first big show with the Humanakas? Was it the Cool Old Ranch one, or was there a bigger one?
Okay, I mean, that's big, but for us, any show was big. Where if we're like our first like. Actual, we're doing a rap show with an actual rap group that is like certified. Was I think Farside and Booyah Tribe?
Okay, yeah, at Campus Center.
Yeah, Campus Center.
Right. Do you remember that show? I always tell this story. I was there. I seen you guys perform. I remember Farside going on, and like all like the backpackers were all in the front. Mm-hmm. When Booyah Tribe, I don't know if you remember this, when Booyah Tribe came on, it was almost like a parting of the seas. Like the gangsters went forward, and all of us guys were like into the shadows. You know, like that Homer Simpson meme. I don't know if I remember that because I was at front, and then when Booyah Tribe came on, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go step back a couple steps here because all the gangster fools were like going up to the front, and I was like, but it was dope because you had like you, Humanakas, right, and then you had Farsat and Booyah Tribe. From the West Coast.
It's like instead of the bush, like the backpackers were like fading into Mayor Wright's.
No, yeah, it was. But you know what? There was no violence.
Yeah.
And it was like almost, and there's two groups I actually listened to. Yeah. So it was dope to have like a local act that I look up to, like, yo, man, that's sick. People doing it like how I'm doing it. And then see Farside was just like crazy. And then you have Booyah Tribe with straight gangster, but being able to coexist. With no violence, that was dope.
I think about that Bizarre Ride, and that's like to me it's a very pivotal album. Like I just like how old I was, and just listening to that in my headphones over and over in high school, and just like really like just absorbing the essence of like hip hop. Like made me want to do it, and then also like finding out later that Slick, a guy from Hawaii, did the artwork.
Yeah.
That was actually like my first like. Wow, superhero Hawaii hip hop moment of like, this guy's from Hawaii. He's doing artwork for this group that's like my favorite group right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then seeing like, those are like, to be honest, like my first heroes in hip hop weren't from the music side. They're from the graph side, like actually seeing them do that. Right. And then like that, you know, seeing, Catch with his piece inside the Source magazine, right? And then it is Source of Rap Pages. But then like finding out like that piece is like in the back of Kalani High School. Yeah. High school, finding out, dude, this is that from the Source. What? Yeah. It's like these connections that are like,
it is crazy.
It's closer than you think, you know? There's a, you know. Yeah.
And it makes it more tangible when you're doing, if you're an MC or an artist, you're like, dude, Slick, he's from here. Like, Yeah. He just did my favorite album's cover.
Like, yeah.
I mean, when I found that out too, I was kind of blown away. Like, what, dude? Like, how does that even work, you know?
Such a legend, man. Salute.
Yeah, but I want to talk about when you guys did Cool Low Ranch though, because that.
Okay.
Yeah. How was that? Like, how did that even happen? Was that,
Sick Dog?
Sick Dog. Yeah, yeah.
I think the first one we did, Cool Low, I don't know if it was the. I know we did Wu-Tang at, it was After Dark. Was like the first big
yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
I think I remember there's like a cypher outside too. There's DJs outside. There's I think Drama then were spinning outside, right?
Oh,
After
yeah.
Dark. They had like a tent outside
yeah.
with a DJ and an open mic, I remember outside, and then the Wu-Tang was inside.
Yeah, I mean, that's that. How it was always said. I remember there's lots of open mics outside of the club. But I think the first I'm thinking of the one we did with Black Eyed Peas and De La Soul. That was with Sick Dog. But
okay.
The Big Melee, that was Golden Voice. Yeah. When Wu came out. Damn, dude, did we open for that? I know we were there. I know we opened for Wu. They did two shows, right? I know they did After Dark and Big Melee, but man, it's so long ago.
Wait, did you guys rock Big Melee with Black Eyed Peas?
Though we didn't do no, we did another show. It wasn't Cool Low Ranch, but we did one. It was with maybe it was Cool Low. It was Black Eyed Peas and De La Soul. That was our first like.
What was that? What was that one at?
That was the Sick Dog one.
That was a Sick Dog one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but Wu-Tang was crazy because that was like people were like, we threw our tapes out in the crowd. And people were whipping the tapes back at us, and like halfway through our set, it's like Wu-Tang, Wu-Tang. And we're like. Man,
you know,
we went through our whole set. We got through it. And then I think another big show was like The Roots over there at After Dark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember that because Malala hit the fire dance on stage. I know that we're not supposed to do that in a sold out room.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he dropped one of the knives on the stage. We're like, oh, and he picked it up. We recovered. But it was crazy, dude. He's like, flipping that.
Yeah, was that planned or he's like, I'm
Yeah, I think he just did it. Yeah,
it was like, typical Malala fashion.
Stole the show.
Dance.
Stole the show. Yeah. And then, that was the era. Those were the groups that we, you know, opened up for. And then as my, you know, career moved on, I opened up for different artists but always as the opening act, you know, it's just, it was always a dope opportunity to like.
So, was there ever an official Humanaka album?
Yeah, we always the tape. The Humanaka's tape came out in '96.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just that tape.
Yeah, but we circulated. We took it out to the West Coast.
You guys traveled.
We took it out there. People were feeling it. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So then the Humanaka's. Then how did it kind of like just kind of dissipate? Do you remember?
I think everybody was kind of on, life, different pursuits, different value, not values, but different, I don't know. People were just kind of like, their goals shifted.
Yeah, yeah,
people
yeah.
wanted to do other things. So it was like, we were all still homies, but I just was like 100% like, after Freestealing and Species, was like, our last, probably when we were still.
So what, explain to the people what Freestealing Species.
So that was when we were talking about High State Family. By the time Freestealing Species came out, Humanaka's was Malala and Moon and Mr. Rios. And it had kind of split off. And then I had become Invisible Ink.
Okay.
But Freestealing Species was like the crew album, the High State album. So all of the, you know, how I was describing all the MCs in High State, if you ever wanted to hear like what I'm talking about everybody's style, it's all on that CD, right? The Freestealing Species. So
yeah,
had everybody on that. And then from there, actually there's a song with me and Taji called Tropical Deluxe.
Okay.
And at that time we were always, as a crew, High State Family, we would always migrate to Mr. Rios's house every Friday. And there was a station on Maui that you could pick that would broadcast the Wake Up Show.
Right.
So if you went to the east side, you could hear the Wake Up Show. And we listened to that religiously. You know, as you know, that was like the proving ground for every MC, you know. So we went there. And I think we had given it to Sway. I met Sway. He came to Hawaii. There was a barbecue somehow. Somebody knew him, met him. We had a barbecue. gave him the, I think it was the Freestealing Species. They end up playing Tropical Deluxe on the Wake Up Show. Nice. And we're in the out at Guijo's listening to it, and we're bugging out.
Did, like, you guys know they were going to play it? Or?
No, we just gave it to him, and then it came on. And then we're like, okay, we got to give him some more stuff. And then from that point is when I started, I was working on Invisible Ink. And that's when we printed our first vinyl. So Invisible Ink was basically me, Guijo, and Aaron in the first Upper Hand EP. And we sent that out to Wake Up Show. We actually sampled Carmelita's voice. If you listen to The Longest Mile, it's like Akira 8. That's from Carmelita from the Wake Up Show talking. And then, so then that came out. I think they played One Drop Ink off of there. And then the next, we put out another EP. We went to L.A. This is, so that's 98. Between 98 and 99, we released two EPs in that 1 year on vinyl. And then 99 was, we went out to actually South Central L.A. Size was living up there. Size joined the group. So now we had two producers, two MCs. He produced all of that one, all of the
Those are all just Walkman EPs classes. Or is there a full LP?
Nope, they're just EPs, like 4 or 5 songs each.
Is there any missing any songs that no one's ever heard? Or
probably. You know, I shelf a lot of music, man. Just I have these certain standards. Right, and it's like, I mean, it's dope, but it's not dope enough type stuff. So there's like a lot of demos floating around.
You guys are in South Central with Size.
Yes. We're like Slauson and Crenshaw, like those areas. But it's like Baldwin Hill. So it's like maybe 6 blocks walking from there. Yeah, so we were over there recording, and definitely like those songs ended up like being some of the best songs, I think, in my legacy, especially like if you look at Pure right now, if you search Invisible Ink Pure on YouTube, there's like the comment section goes crazy, like people like just loving it, not even knowing we're from Hawaii, anything about it. They think that we're all from New York when they listen to that song. But the comments are like, this is like inspiring. This is that true hip hop. This is that. And it's like, you know, these people don't know anything about it. So it's like unbiased. So it's like whenever I have like a day when I'm feeling grumpy or low, I just go in there, I read the comments.
Yeah. Like, okay. Hey, man, you got to self-affirm sometimes. Yeah, you know what I mean?
But yeah, reflect. So that's, I mean, that, and then that, so that was, that song just took on a life of its own. And then I think at that point, we opened up for Hieroglyphics, Souls of Mischief at the Wave. And that was the crazy show where we wore like these painter suits. We thought it would look super cool, but it ended up looking just like a bunch of blue Teletubbies on stage. but I remember that show was so live. I don't know. I just recently did a show with Souls of Mischief. And I feel like our music and their ethos is kind of like intertwined. Like it's the right crowd for our music. And every time we do shows with them, like the crowd is so receptive and so hype. Like, and I remember I actually stage dived. That was the first time I stage dived.
Nice.
I looked like a little blueberry floating around on the crowd and then threw back on stage. But we were so hyped, like, just to be like, have our own music on
right,
wax,
right, right.
Know?
Yeah, and, no, that's a major, you know, that's a major thing. You know, I really think that's kind of, well, a lot of new artists, they don't actually, you got to believe first in your craft to up that money to get it pressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And vinyl is hot right now. Like,
yeah,
don't no doubt about it. Like vinyl sells. I don't care what people say. If you believe in your art, if you're an MC producer, put out a vinyl. That's like the proving ground to if you really can move and sell.
I think besides maybe DJ Paco in this room are the only hip hop artists that actually release vinyl in Hawaii. I don't know that there's anybody else that has wax.
I mean, only
Todd G has wax.
Todd G, Rise Up.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Rise
Up,
Rise Up, Rise Up, Todd G.
Shout out Direct Descendants.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Paco.
There's only a handful, man, who took that, went that extra mile, you know, to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and there's nothing.
It ain't final till it's vinyl, you know what I mean?
Final till it's vinyl.
Yeah.
I'm a stern believer, and every time I got these young guys coming to me, asking me, I'm like, put on vinyl. And you only got to make 100 pieces if you don't. 100 is nothing.
Yeah.
And it's pure profit. I always tell them, if it's about that money, you can make your money quick and fast. And you're foreverly embedded in the annals of hip hop.
For real.
But anyway, so back to that. So you're doing the Invisible Ink.
Yeah.
And then when did that kind of not slow down? When did the shift or the movement from that to becoming immersed, Tosho Pierce?
Okay. I don't know. We had, like, with Invisible Ink, that was a tremendous run from, like, 98 to 99 to 2000. We were able to, like, that was the same time in that window I appeared on the Wake Up Show 2 times.
Right.
You know, I did, like, we did numerous trips to the West Coast. I remember going on to KUSF in San Francisco with Winnie B. and ciphering with LP from CoFlow. And this is Fun Crusher EP LP.
Nice.
This is raw.
Yeah, raw LP.
Like the rawest.
Yeah.
And I had to, you know, back and forth with him.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, super intimidating, but it's like, you know, we had to step up and rep for the city. That was like probably one of the most important ciphers. You know, because it's also outside of Hawaii, getting out to the mainland and getting on the radio. It's not just like in the club. Like, it's actually everyone's hearing it. And then the next, probably most important, was this is all during Invisible Ink, was going to the Wake Up Show and freestyling with Pharoah Monch.
Yeah.
And we were at a table just like this. It was me, Pharoah, Declaim, this kid Spontaneous. And it was going around. And the funniest thing I remember is, like, when we're all rapping, we're like, Pharoah's probably like, who are these crumbs? You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
he's
like God-level MC.
Organized
like, who are these guys? Anyways, we're, like, rapping. I remember him distinctly while we're rapping. He had his, like, Rap Pages magazine. He's, like, flipping through the magazine while we're all doing our parts, right?
Wow.
And we're like, yeah. But, I mean, that made me even more, like, it kind of, like, lit a fire under me. And then my verse from that freestyle ended up being on, like, the Best of Wake Up Show freestyles.
Right.
So it's like, that was super gratifying, you know, just to know that, like, okay, we with these guys that are, like, my idols, like, some of the top-tier lyricists and able to, like, not like, I'm not saying like I'm as dope, but I'm hanging with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm in the conversation.
That's all you really want coming from Hawaii is respect, right? And be able to people to say like, yeah, that guy can hang.
Yeah.
We know we can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But just to get that nod, especially from Sway, Pharoah, LP, you know what I mean? You don't want anybody calling you whack.
No, you get kicked off. That's the Wake Up Show, bro.
You
can't be whack.
Yeah.
You whack, you're getting called out.
So it's just you going to these shows solo or Size with you?
Yeah, Size was with me. This is Invisible Ink. My man Hakeem was with me, who was our like liaison when we're recording in LA. He became my manager later on, even with the Immerse stuff. So I think after Invisible Ink, Reconcile back with the Human. Like the whole time, those are my boys. You know, I love those guys, even to this day. Like, Malala, Aaron, Gijo, those are like my brothers. So we're like, okay, you know what? Bygones be bygones. Let's get it back together. So we record a whole nother album.
Oh, crazy.
I put Invisible Ink on the shelf. We have all this momentum with Invisible Ink.
Yeah, yeah.
We could have like kept going. Like people thought Invisible Ink was going to be the next thing because like we were doing stuff no one had ever done.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Getting it like on these radio shows and having vinyls. But okay, let's go back. Let's do some more Humanaka stuff. We recorded like a whole album. Same kind of thing happens. I don't know. I don't want to say exactly what the differences were, but it's just mainly like just, I guess like some people were not ready to go and just put 100% behind the music and the effort that it takes. They were sidetracked with other pursuits and hustles and things like that were like.
Because you were coming from being deep in the sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Deep, you're at the Wake Up Show.
Mm-hmm.
You're rhyming. You're, you're recording in L.A. You're removed from Hawaii.
Yeah,
that Hawaii hang back, hang loose.
Yeah.
Mentality. You're like in L.A.
Yeah.
Recording, going to work, hustling the vinyl at the Wake Up Show, spinning, rhyming, writing. Come back to Hawaii. Let's do this, guys. So already you could see like you're there. Let's do this, guys. Humanakas, and then you know, being from Hawaii, I know we know. That a lot of times that's the downfall of a lot of Hawaii artists.
At the end of the day, I think the project is dope and I think that it will come out. It was just not like, I don't know if somebody got locked up. I know there was like, there was definitely a huge hurdle that we couldn't get around. And there was like, I didn't want to wait for it to like resolve itself and then for us to move on from there. Like, so it became another thing where it was like kind of like just a demo that got put on the side. Like,
right.
That got, you know, like albums get shelved all the time from major labels, but you know, that's kind of what happened. And I still feel like it wasn't really necessarily my call. It was just like, if I wasn't going to put it out, nobody was going to put it out. Right. And I was like,
because you had the means, you created the pipeline, mm-hmm. the connections, created the relationships. You're like, okay, yeah, if we're going to do this, it'll be me. But if I'm not getting 100, then it's like,
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely probably maybe one of the, you know, regret that I had, like that we weren't able to bring that to fruition. But I think it's still possible. And then I guess at that point, I still felt I had some momentum. So now we're going into 2002, 2003, you know, 20 years ago.
Crazy.
I start working on my own thing. Okay, you know, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do it myself. I start Immerse. Crime spelled backwards.
Right.
I create the logo for Flip the Bird. It's the upside down bird with the X's in the eyes.
Nice.
So
is the crime spelled backwards because like you're basically flipping what's happening, you know, the negativity?
Yeah, we had certain things. Yeah, we were all like, you know, doing a lot of things that were like probably detrimental to our, you know, our future,
right.
Basically. We were not going down the right path, so I wanted to flip that and turn immerse myself in music and hip-hop.
That's dope.
Whereas, you know, all the homies weren't ready to do that. Everybody was still, you know, pursuing their other hustles and
right,
stuff.
Right.
And not to say that I was completely done with it, but I had definitely prioritized the music over everything. And then we made some T-shirts to promote the album release. And we had a good buzz for the album because, you know, the Honolulu was released. We did that one on vinyl. That was the first release.
Right.
On Flip the Bird was the 12 inch. And, you know, through the Wake Up Show, I was able to connect with Rhett Maddock, who produced
shout to Rhett.
Yeah. Rhett Maddock. He's like, to me, he's like the Questlove of the West Coast. He's like the encyclopedia of hip hop knowledge. But anyway, he produced the title track, Rhyme and Punishment. That was on the 12 inch. And yeah, Honolulu took off. That was crazy. It just like ended up on all the, you know, on all the radio stations, you know, started getting even more shows. It became like kind of like woven into the fabric of Hawaii hip hop. It became a part of our story. It wasn't just my story. It was like all of our story.
Right.
Because, you know, Hawaii, we remember those wins, right? Like Honolulu was a win. That was like,
yeah,
we got a W that day. And then it's like, you know, like BJ Penn, when he won the title, like Max Holloway, going back to like Sid Fernandez,
nice.
Like
yeah.
anything. Like we remember our wins,
right,
you know,
right.
That's a dub. That's a dub for Hawaii. You know, all of those things. And that was like, that was one of the dubs that we got as a hip hop scene.
When you made that song, did you envision it to do what it did? Or no, you just said, I'll make a song for my city.
I did. I wanted to make an anthem for Hawaii, but I didn't think it was going to be like, I didn't know it was going to be embraced like by everyone. But that was like, you know, I wanted to make a record that wasn't just all battle raps. That was just in like, because that's like one of my favorite albums of all times is like No Need for Alarm, Dell. And he's just like chopping off rappers' heads like every song. If you listen to Rhyme and Punishment, there's a lot of that on there. But it's also like I wanted to have some concepts and show my versatility
as
a writer.
Is it all Gijo and Size?
Yes, and Rhett Maddock.
Rhett
Maddock did that one track.
So the relationship with Rhett, you met him through the Wake Up Show, or was it through Visionaries coming to Hawaii?
It's probably when they came to Hawaii, yeah. I know I don't know if this was before, we toured with them. We did it like 3 dates with the Visionaries.
Nice.
And I don't know if you know, it's at a certain point, Up Above re-released Honolulu.
Right.
The 12-inch, and we did a remix with Babu on the B-side.
Right.
And then that.
Shout out to Doug.
Yeah,
right?
Doug Kato, they got behind it. But to not to sidetrack too much, I want to go back to, so we printed up the T-shirts for the album release party.
Yeah, hold on real quick. So you made these shirts
yeah.
trying to promote the album
yeah.
and promote the record label.
Yeah.
The Flip the Bird, this imprint that you created.
Yeah.
Flip the Bird, you're like, yo, I need shirts, represent. That's pretty much what it started
as. Yeah, we had seen a glimpse of what it's like to see that you could do it yourself through brands like Shaolin, you know, Manifest and Slick. They've laced us with gear. And even before that, if you look at the Walkman Classic CD cover, the inlet, it has a photo of us and we're all rocking Serco.
Yeah.
And that's the first streetwear brand that I remember from Hawaii. That's Keone Payton.
Yeah. Shout out to Keone.
Yeah. I mean, that was huge inspiration. You know, actually, that's Casper's cousin, too. So, we had, history, too. We knew him. That's how we ended up getting laced by his first brand. And then, so we saw, like, okay, this is possible. So then I made the shirts. All of a sudden, it started taking off. I realized, okay, we can start selling these shirts. You know, I can use this as like a viable, you know, source of income and a way to like express my creativity through designs.
Yeah.
Luckily, Manifest plugged me into JT, John Thomas.
I was going to get into that.
Yeah, so he was the man behind Flame Boy, World Industries. So big, big, huge designer. He's got crazy stories of like working for this huge corporation.
Right.
Skate brand, and then he you know separated from them and moved to Hawaii, wanted to raise his family here like so many of us do, and connected with him and we were able to like build this rapport, like this chemistry between us where I could like just feed him any idea and he'd be able to make it. I imagine it's the same thing between you and Spell.
Oh,
like yeah. I know like they have their own ideas too, but the strength of the brand comes from when you guys are able to
Definitely.
Combine the ideas and the talents of the graphic designer. So with that behind me, I was pretty much unstoppable. I felt, okay, we got some dope designs.
Yeah.
I think we were inspired by Cause, Original Fake, Bape.
Okay.
I really love those brands, but I could never afford any of those shirts.
Yeah, same,
like,
same.
So I was like, yo, I'm going to just make my own shirts that kind of look like that match the same shirts.
Right, right.
Match the same shoes. I would take it over to Kicks Hawaii, took it to Lalo. That's when Kicks Hawaii and Lalo were together upstairs.
Right.
Met Ian for the first time, and he was the guy who, like, put me on game. He was like, you can't be selling these shirts with the Hanes tag on it.
Right, right.
You got to get your own tags. Sent me to Dana Labels, made my own tags, put them on the shirt, started selling there, you know, started selling information, Sarah's Surf. Boom. All of a sudden, you know, we're still doing shows. We're still promoting music. But, like, there's a reason I didn't put out any music between 2003 and 2008. And that's, like, Flip the Bird was just, like,
5 years,
had
this, baby.
Had a whole... you know, moment where it was like, not only you'd be walking around on the west side and you see like a G logo shirt, like, you know, with the Gucci pattern, like you would see it like celebrities, you know, would be wearing it. Like not just a lot of the artists, when I open up, I would give them clothes and then like Method Man, I'll give him a shirt and then he'll put on the shirt. Red Man, I'll open up, give him a shirt and then he'll end up taking a picture. But then, as it progressed, we started seeing like, oh, there's Lupe wearing a shirt doing a YouTube interview. Oh,
right, right.
Chris Brown with Rihanna wearing a shirt. Now, I did not give these guys that shirt. There's Mike Epps wearing a shirt. Like it just started like spreading like that. But it wasn't just luck. It was like a lot of hard work. I literally put the brand in my backpack. I think I went to the Crooks and Castles website and I looked at their stock list.
Right.
All the doors that they carried their brand. And I just like literally flew to those stores and like with a backpack full of gear and a line sheet, like stores like Ubik in Philly. I went there.
Nice.
Boom. They're carrying Flip the Bird. These are like the main places you need to be in to be a legit streetwear brand.
Right.
This is when the hype beast, before the hype beast, this is still
still
the streetwear renaissance, I guess you would call it. And then I went to Boston, Bodega, went over there.
Nice.
All of a sudden they're carrying our shirts. True in San Francisco. Like
did JT teach you about the line sheet or was that Ian from Kicks?
It was probably JT, I imagine. He's like, so how are you going to sell this stuff? I was like, I don't know. Just take it. Well, you should probably make a line sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What's that?
What's a line sheet? Hey, yo, straight up. Yeah. Shout out to JT, man. Like, I mean, when I remember when Tasha told me, I was like, hey, who designed your stuff? You're like, yeah, this guy named John Thomas. I was like, wait, John Thomas, Alva, skateboarding. Legend. I was like bugging out because I'm like, dude, he has his own move.
Right.
The JT Air.
JT Air.
Yeah, right? It's a tuck knee. It's like a front side grab tuck knee. And I was, as a kid, like, I used to do that move all the time. So I was kind of bugging out when Tasha told me about that as like a young skate kid, like third grade, like JT. And I'm like, he lives here. I'm like, dude, he designed your stuff. And I was like, I was mind blown, you know, on this whole another path of outside of hip hop was skateboarding, which, you know, of course, Manifest, you know, Jeff Hartzell. Right? Yeah. Did he do any designs for you?
We did a collaboration. We did that State Is High.
That's right.
Yeah. I and then he shirt. Actually he did another one with Aaron, which is the logo for Invisible Ink with the it was our upper hand logo, which was the two Spy vs. Spy guys, one with the mic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was one of our designs too.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and then he actually was the first guy I came to with the Flip the Bird, and that ended up being a collaboration. It didn't end up being the main logo.
Right.
it was dope, but it was like abstract and super like it was a dope logo. But I just wanted it more simple. And he's like, you know, dude, go. My boy JT just moved.
Right,
here.
Right.
You should go meet up with
so
him.
So it's more poetry.
Yeah,
like that you was know, before, like,
yeah, when he was going into poetry from Shaolin.
So anyway, so you're giving all this, so you're straight up, feet to the ground, foot soldier.
Yeah.
Hitting up all these stock lists, bang, 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 backpack, line sheets, MC from Hawaii. You're doing your thing, music-wise.
Yeah.
But then you took a lick, you're like, dude, this clothing thing, you know, I'm gonna run with it.
Yeah, it just, made a certain level of a popularity that I don't think surpassed whatever popularity I had from Honolulu, which was probably like the apex of my
right,
you know, music career. Yeah. So that's I just pursued it and went all out with that. And like, you know, so that opened up some of the biggest like moments as far as an artist meeting other artists, like, you know, meeting Eminem for the first time.
Wow.
Like I met him at Avex Studio. He was out here with Dre. In the studio, come out. He's standing there. The manager's like, this is Marshall. And I'm like looking. I'm like, oh my goodness. And I'm like I'm in shock, right? And then the first thing he says, oh, you do that Flip the Bird brand, right? I was like, yeah. I was like, that's my brand. He's like, yeah. Haley was just wearing your shirt the other day. I was like, what?
Oh,
like,
that's crazy.
And then, you know, I didn't want to take up too much of their time when they're in the studio. Like, I had just met him, but I just basically told him how much he influenced me as an artist and like that his music was like even a big part of the inspiration of the brand. And like, yo, thank you so much, basically, you know. And then I split. And then I found out later, a few weeks later, like the Relapsed album came out and he's rocking Flip the Bird on the inside. It's like him and Dre in the studio, and he's wearing our Producticons shirt, which was it's like the Constructicons, like from Transformers, except it was like an ASR-10 on the arm, NPC on the chest, the speaker, so it was the Producticons, and he's wearing that shirt like on the CD cover, which was like insane. Like,
and then eventually through Avex, you kind of met Kanye.
Yeah.
Through that?
Yes. Yeah, no, those were like probably the best years of my life. Like, you're talking about like, you know, my best memories besides like my son being born, you know, getting married.
Yes.
Shout out to Tracy, shout out to Itaru. But outside of those moments, like, you know, those are probably some of the best moments. It's like 2008, 2009, working, you know, not initially working with, in 2008 during 808s and Heartbreaks, meeting Ye for the second time, because the first time I met him was at the Touch the Sky tour. I opened up for them at Blaisdell.
Right, right.
And then I gave him some clothes backstage, and then he ends up wearing those on Wango Tango concert, like the 90s All-Star shirt.
That's
like,
the shirt.
That was like one of that was the first big cosign.
That shirt was dope. Like
the most illegal shirt of all time. But you know, the funny thing is, like, we had like, so 90s All-Stars was basically, if you remember, like, the NBA All-Stars game, you'd see like those Pele Pele type leather jackets with all the NBA logos on the jacket, right? So we want to do a 90s All-Star. So it's basically we couldn't get the leather jacket. That was not in the budget. So we did a t-shirt and we put all the 90s hip hop logos on there, you know, whether it was like Gangstar, Freestyle Fellowship, you know, Organized Confusion, Tribe, everything. Certain people got left off because they were like on the cusp. They're like, these are more 80s artists. So you don't got to think like Run DMC, Public Enemy, certain like, okay, these guys are in this side, but if we keep it straight 90s. And that shirt, like, it was controversial, right? Because, like, yeah, I didn't get any permission. But everybody that I met, like, I remember I met the Alcoholics, right? And I gave them the shirt. And their logo's on there, right? And then, like, they're not tripping. Actually, J-Ro ends up wearing the shirt on stage when they perform. You know what I mean?
Shout out to Alcoholics.
The only time I ever had any, like, conflict with that shirt was, like, I gave it to Evidence.
Oh, and
but he's not on the shirt. Right. But he just had something to say about it. He's like, oh, he's like, hmm. It's like Boogie Monsters, huh? he's like, oh, you didn't. He's like, you could have put Mobb Deep on there. I was like, you know, I was thinking Mobb Deep. I was definitely, you know, and if you think about cultural impact now and you go back, you probably would have to. But yeah,
that's a lot of logos, though.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Boogie Monsters
I just posted a Boogie Monsters YouTube on top of Facebook, you know?
Yeah.
That's funny. But then speaking of Evidence, that's one of the list of MCs and producers you work with. Throughout your career, which is crazy because, I mean, you worked with Merce, Rhett, Ev, Rocka, Qbert, Babu, Apathy, Kid Cudi, and No ID and Kid Cudi on one track. Like, what did you ever, is that the plan the whole time, is work to eventually get with these guys, or that just came naturally through your meeting of the minds and making the connections?
Yeah, honestly, dude, like, I got to think back to, like, 17-year-old me, and all I wanted was to, like, meet these guys. Like, they just lived in my head, in my headphones. Right. Like, whether it was Dell, Hieroglyphics, you know, Tribe, like, RZA, the Wu-Tang Clan, like, you know, even Dilated Peoples. I had, like, their first vinyls, their first wax when it dropped. Like, all of these guys, like, I wanted to meet them and, like, I wanted to hang out with them and I wish these were my friends.
I wish
I could, like, I was cool with them. And it wasn't ever like, oh, I want to be super famous or I want to get rich off this music. It's just like, man, I wish I could make music that's dope. And I wish that I could, like, hang out with some of these guys, like, that I could be dope enough to where, like, I could kick it with these guys. And, like, honestly, that's, like, the greatest, like, accomplishment that I've been able to do. Like, as far as, like, you know, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, like, all the, if you win a Grammy or you got a million followers or all these awards, and you're not going to be thinking about that. You'd be thinking about, like, the people you met, the relationships you had, the journey, the experiences, and, like, all of those experiences are, like, something that I, like, holds, you know, in my heart, like, super valuable to me, like, the lessons and just, like, spending time with those people that, like, I have so much respect for, that, like, you know, open the doors for so many people to, like, experience, like, the blessings of hip hop, right? Because, like, hip hop just makes you feel good. It makes you feel young. It gives you, like, all this inspiration that you can take with you. And, like, yeah, so those moments with those guys is, like, probably, like, my greatest achievement, just being able to kick it with those guys and actually, you know, creatively build and make music, like, I remember, like, being in the studio during Dark Twisted Fantasy, and, like, for the first, you know, long section of time, I would just be on the couch on the outside, not allowed in the main room. But over time, like, I had gained access and been welcomed into the creative process. And like, being in the room and seeing, like, Q-Tips over here, the RZA over here, Pete Rock, you know, and, like, even being able to, like, every once in a while, like, throw out a line, and then seeing Kanye's eyes, like, brighten. Like, 9 times out of 10, first of all, you gotta imagine how, like, gut-wrenching it is to even try to, like, suggest that an artist of this caliber would say something, an idea, that you have to pitch it to them. Like, why would I? And then, like, 9 times out of 10, he would say, oh, I would never say that. Like, he would literally say, your idea would get shut down. But you cannot just, like, cower and be you gotta step up. You're in the room for a reason. So, you know, every once in a while, maybe a few lines on the Dark Twisted Fantasy, I threw a line out there. I seen his eyes twinkle. He'll run in the booth, and he, like, said the exact same lines. You know, I'm not going to say what it is, like the studio rules. You're not supposed to talk about anything that happened. But I, you know, I'm my mama. Like, that's like real stuff that happened. And it's like, those are like super like gratifying, and just like the experience of being around those guys. I'm forever grateful to Kanye. Well, say whatever you will about him, I will never have anything bad about, because he opened the doors. Yeah. He didn't have to do that. He let me be in there. I'll be there from 2 in the afternoon to like 6 in the morning the next day. You know, by the end of Dark Twisted Fantasy, I'll be like going and like playing ball with them at the YMCA, and then like going to the studio. Like, I was like, literally, those guys are like family to me. Like, I spent more time with them than I've spent with some of my closest friends. Because about like 6 months every day from like 2 p.m. till 4, 6 a.m. in the morning. Sheesh. Yeah. And then before that was, you know, 808s. It was like 6 weeks. But yeah, those guys, forever grateful. And even, you know, Dilated, Qbert, all these guys that are like legends to me and my heroes, like, that just means so much to like actually steal a moment of their time and have them like focus on my project, this album, this song, and create something like, you know, that will last forever, hopefully.
That's huge, man. You ever thought maybe, you ever had that inkling, maybe that thought that you were ahead of your time with the music, with the marketing strategies? Maybe at the time you're not thinking about marketing strategies or line sheets or clothing, like, but now that you can be older now and reflect back, you're like, dude, this, I did something.
Yeah.
You ever think like that?
You do, but then, you know, you have that idea of like, you don't always want to be. I mean, I feel like definitely those are some of my best moments so far, but I feel like, you know, there's always going to be better moments coming, you know, like, life is like that. You know, that was just for that moment in time, like, definitely something I hold precious, those experiences. And but I don't know if I was ahead of my time. I don't know if I like would be more successful now if I had all the knowledge to do. I think it was just the right time to do all of those things. Without the clothing brand, I wouldn't have been able to go in there and meet M and meet Kanye. That's kind of like how I got my way in the studio. I got this brand. Let me hit you off with some clothes, da-da-da-da-da. And that, you know, that was the right time and the right place. Because otherwise, if maybe they're not in Hawaii, you know, at the same time I have a clothing brand, if it's later. You know, all the timing, all the thing has to be perfect. That's why I feel like almost like the luckiest person in the world when it comes to like those moments, just like meeting those people. Like, I may not have like, I don't have a platinum plaque, I don't have a Grammy, but I'm not like super famous. But I almost feel like if I was, I don't know if I'd be the same person. Mm. I don't know if I would still value the same things. I don't know if I would still like have this close connection with my family and you know, my friends. I think maybe I would be a different person. And not like, not to say that makes you a bad person, that kind of success, but it definitely makes you focus on other things.
True.
Yeah. I mean, you know how we are. We like, it's all about family. That's why I moved back home with my wife and Itaru. I want to raise him here, you know.
Definitely. So. It's that Hawaii.
Yeah.
We're going to rewind really quick.
Yeah.
I want to talk about really quick Run Athletics and the shoes.
Okay.
Because I just need to know, like, give us a breakdown on that, how that happened.
Okay.
What era was, what date, well, I mean, not date, but what year?
Okay, that was 1998. I had met, this is through Hakeem again, who was my manager at the time, met Rashid Young, who was the president of, I think Run was the president, right? So it's Russell Simmons' brand. Right. He had Run Athletics, which was, you know, Run's footwear line. Rashid connects me, well, we meet them in Hawaii. They love the Flip the Bird brand. They said, okay, we're going to make a sneaker together. I'm like, word?
Wow.
Like, basically, yeah, they love the brand. They were like, this is like the streetwear renaissance. Everyone's doing collaborations. Yeah. I might have shown them a picture of like Kanye wearing it or something. Yeah, I showed them a picture of Redman. You know, they're Def Jam, you know, basically. Right. And then before they leave, they say, you should meet Russell. Come to the Halekulani. I go there for breakfast, and they're sitting there nervously, you know, meet Russell Simmons. I told him, like, you're such a, you know, important figure. Like, listen to all the Def Jam albums and I've told this story before. I basically said, is there any advice you can give me as, like, starting a streetwear brand? He's like, you're doing a sneaker with us, right? I was like, yeah. He's like, I think you're doing pretty good. I was just like, you know, enjoy where you're at right now. Like basically nice. Like yeah. Take in that moment. Like we're talking about like those, the journey, right? All those, you got to take in those moments those wins. You got to like actually appreciate it, not just always be going for the next goal, right? Yeah. Like that. So he basically, that gem is like something that I still try to like communicate to this day. But so boom, make 4 designs, work with JT, crank them out. And then all of a sudden, like, yo, we got to make, we want to do some t-shirts to help promote the shoe. So boom, we're doing the collaboration, official collaboration with Redman.
Wow.
We did the How High shirt, but it's HI, like for Hawaii.
Right, right, right.
And then we did the Mahalo Man. So it's like the Method Man logo, but it says Mahalo. And these are like official collaborations through Def Jam, through Run Athletics, you know, limited, probably like maybe 200, 100 shirts, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, if you ever have any of those, like, yeah, I'll buy it from you. but yeah, so those were like distributed worldwide sneaker boutiques throughout Europe. Like Colette in France had it, like in Japan. So that was like a huge thing.
So 4 designs, yeah. But they chose 2.
They chose 3.
3.
Yeah, the one they didn't choose was Koa Wood, which was like ocean and like... It's like brown and blue. But the one they chose were Shea Vice, kind of pastel colors, and then Bird of Paradise.
Okay.
Which is kind of like, it's kind of like some ice cream, right? Like kind of vibes. Yeah. And then the number one was the Humu Humu Nuku Nuku Apua.
Right, right, right.
Which I today still think maybe we should have the Guinness for the longest name for a shoe. Maybe it's like, it's not the longest name for a fish.
I thought that was genius. When I seen it, I was like, dude, this is freaking genius. Like, who, like, it looks like the way it was designed, like
who would think the fish would look cool as a sneaker, right? But it does. It looks cool as a sneaker.
Well, that's what I was saying, like, ahead of your time. Like, I don't know if you see it, but from the outside looking in and knowing you, and I'm like, yo, Tasho, I don't know if he knew him. Like, you're ahead of your time.
I appreciate that, brother.
For all of that stuff, you know what I mean? But you're just...
Actually, yeah. I think I was the first, like, independent hip-hop artist to have a sneaker deal because I feel like Jay-Z had a sneaker, but he was already signed. You know, there wasn't any independent artist with a sneaker deal. So, yeah.
It was way before Kanye. And,
And
his sneakers weren't even that fresh. Like, this is, like, fresh and held it down for Hawaii.
Yeah.
And you had on the label on the tongue, it said High State, right?
It said High State. It had the little tag with the Hawaiian Islands on it. Crazy part about that is like I was a little shorty, second, third grade, like holding up my sneaker like to run. Like when he said, put your Adidas up in the air, I was putting my shoe up. I didn't have the Adidas. It was some other shoe, but whatever. Held it up, you know, and then like later on, you know, I got to do the sneaker with Run. Like so that
full
was
full circle.
Yeah.
And how many sneakers were made?
So I think they have 500 pairs of each one.
Do you have a pair of each one?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
For sure. And I even have the prototype of the Koa Wood.
You better,
I think it's just the left foot. It's like, I can't.
You got to send me a picture. I want to post it on Late Sleeper.
Yeah. I was going to bring all that stuff. I thought it was going to be corny, but I was going to bring it and be like, I'm going to do a reverse Nardwar. bring my own stuff.
That's funny. Reverse Nardwar. Shout out to Nardwar. But shoot, man, let's wrap this up real quick. Since you pretty much run the gambit from clothing, you met icons, you know, open mic freestyles, you've been to the mainland, recorded in big studios, small studios. I mean, you've kind of done it all as a Hawaii artist. You know what I mean? Like, what is your advice? What can you give to the next generation of Hawaii artists, you know, that's trying to come up mm-hmm. in this day and time? All the stuff that you've known from the past till now, and you continue to learn, like, what can you give? What kind of advice can you give to the next generation?
The main thing that I like, you know, drove me is like just appreciating the actual process, the craft, you know, like be dope, make something dope and take pride that it's dope. Don't like count on like other people, like, you know, to feel gratified. You know, you should get fulfillment out of just making music, whether you're getting recognized for it or not. Like the fulfillment comes from just like writing that perfect 16, you know, and everybody has their own vision of what success means, you know, And I think in this day and age, a lot of it comes from how many eyes you have on your music or how many followers you have, or, you know what I mean, if you're verified and this, that. But, like, at the end of the day, it's like, love what you do and do it, like, put your all into it, and then, like, believe in that you can do it. Because a lot of time, you're going to be the only one. There's going to be times when nobody else is going to believe it. But if you know that, like, dude, I just wrote this 16 that was, like, flawless, airtight. Like, I'll put this 16 up against anybody's 16. Then you can carry that confidence. And then sometimes, you know, you won't get any kind of acceptance. People will not, like, necessarily, like, give you your flowers. But if you have a few certain people that you meet along the way, and they are like, you know, your stuff is dope, that can help you carry on for, like, 5-10 years after that. Like, you know, forget what this guy said. You know, forget what all of these people said. This one guy who I really respect said I'm dope. So I can, like, you know, that's like a badge of honor that you carry with you. So it's like, it's all about the craft at the end of the day. It's about skill, attention to detail, putting in the hours, and making something that's dope. And if you do that, you're also going to be making something that's timeless. Yeah.
Solid. And that's it. Tasho Pierce, thanks for coming through.
Thank you, Cav.
Ala Nui Mele with Cav at the Catalyst on PBS Hawaii.
Love.
Peace.
Mahalo for listening to Ala Nui Mele on PBS Hawaii. Introduction beat by Just One Old. You can listen to Ala Nui Mele on all streaming platforms. And check us on social media at PBS Hawaii or www.pbshawaii.org.